Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress controls and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 418. In this episode, Scott talks with Lisa Larson Kelly about WebRTC.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with Lisa Larson Kelly from learnfromlisa.com. She's going to teach me about WebRTC. So that's real-time communications. That's as much as I know.
Yes, it is real-time communication on the web.
I know that there's WebSockets, though. Well, how is this different from WebSockets?
The big difference is that it's peer-to-peer, for one thing, and it's also native in the browser, the peer-to-peer connections.
So when we say native in the browser, that means I don't have to think about plugins, right?
Right. No plugins. That's ideal. no plugins at all. It's native right now, though, I have to say. It's only in Chrome, Firefox, and a little bit in Opera.
Mm-hmm. And how did this start, and what is the ultimate goal?
It started out with a few of the bigger players, you know, Ericsson, Google, and a bunch of other people got together over an informal lunch, actually, and said, hey, we should be able to do real-time communication natively, shouldn't we? And they said, yes, we can. And so they formed a couple of working groups, and work got underway.
So when we say real-time communications, this is real-time communications from one browser to another browser, right? Not from the browser to the server.
Well, funny you should say that. It's actually, a lot of times people will think of this and think, oh, I can build my Skype killer. You know, you can do right in the browser. I can do webcam to webcam. It's more than that, though, because you can also have a machine to machine. So, for example, Chromecast is using this right now. So you can really start to use it in the whole Internet of Things world.
Okay. So we had someone on from Plex recently on the show talking about Chromecast. And one of the things that was interesting about it was that there's a handoff where I take my iPhone and I say, go play YouTube here. And everyone thought that, you know, the kind of traditional way that people who understand Internet architecture like myself assume is that the iPhone would then be coordinating with the Chromecast. But in fact, it talks, you're saying peer-to-peer with the Chromecast, hands off, and then the iPhone's no longer involved.
Right. Now it's, Google, of course, has their own special sauce that, they've got a bunch of stuff that they're doing under the hood there. But the main structure of it is WebRTC based in that technology.
Mm-hmm. So. And there's a really interesting demo. It's a video chat demo at apprtc.appspot.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's this notion of user media. What is this about?
Get user media is one of the WebRTC APIs, and it lets you grab the webcam and microphone from the browser, and then you can take that stream and share it among peers. So, yeah, and AppRTC is a great kind of way to get started with that. It's an open source example, and it lets you create this two-way video conversation, full screen, without any extra servers or plugins or anything in the way.
So you're saying that I could write some JavaScript, put it in a local HTML file, and, you know, with some number of lines of code, not a huge amount, and the right browser, you and I could have a video chat, not a Skype killer, but a basic peer-to-peer video chat?
Yes, that is true.
What about things like NAT traversal and firewalls and all those problems?
No, that's where things get a little bit crazy. Peer-to-peer, ideally, right? We could just connect right to each other, nothing in the way. But unfortunately, we run into NAT and firewalls. So we can't actually get that connection. We have to you know, bust that NAT basically. To do this, we need some servers. So there are a couple of levels that you would go through. First, you would try a stun server. And the stun server is basically like, what's my IP? You know, if you, that service. So it'll go out and say, okay, you know, I'm on this internal network. You go out to the stun server and say, tell me what my external IP is. It'll pass that information back to you. Then you can send it out to the peer that you want to connect to. They can do the same. And then you're connected. If that doesn't work, if you are behind a restricted firewall, then you'll have to, start using a turn server. So you'll have to specify that, as the app creator. You'll have to either use a service or set it up yourself. And what the turn server does is it sets up a relay. So you're not actually peer-to-peer at that point. It still feels that way, and the user wouldn't really know the difference. But you're actually, you know, that information is being relayed through the server.
Okay, so let's bring that down a little bit to the average person who is listening to this show's perspective. Because yeah. You said, first we said NAT.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So, you know, NAT, Network Address Translation. Mm-hmm. Is as a way for letting folks behind firewalls pretend that they're really not behind firewalls, right?
Right, exactly. So that you can, you know what their full address is externally outside of their local network.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny that we've built so much technology that layers on so many other technologies that we're starting to get these multiple nested acronyms. So you said a stun. Yes. Server. Yes. That's usually called Session Traversal Utilities for NAT, which is itself its own thing.
It is. It's an acronym of an acronym.
Yeah. I've also heard people call STUN Simple Traversal of UDP through NATs. So there's multiple.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Multiple acronyms within that.
Well, you know, it all does the same thing, right?
So is the fancy way to explain it is a STUN server, but this is just a way to discover an IP address.
It is. It's just a way to discover, a direct connection to another peer.
Are these servers that I need to make? If I go and write my video chat mm-hmm. Skype killer, am I going to have to go and write mm-hmm. stun and turn servers?
It depends if you want to, if you're into that kind of thing, you know, you have a lot of options out there as far as open source versions of those servers that you can go and do that, set up your own. Mm-hmm. Or there's services as well. There's a few, you know, commercial ones out there that are already setting up shop for these kind of applications. And Google has, just for developers, you want to play around with it, Google has a couple that you can just plug into.
I see.
You can just Google that and, you know, you can get those addresses. But they're not so reliable, so you don't want to, you know, of course, go into development with those.
Okay. So it sounds like, well, stun and turn is something I need to think about, know about. I don't need to go and sit down and start opening sockets and writing this stuff myself.
No.
Find the apps or find the servers to do that.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, with the advent of HTML5 and before WebRTC, we started to see kind of this increase in access to device hardware. So it seems like this really wouldn't, like, WebRTC wouldn't have been as interesting had the work to do get user media happened first.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. It got people excited, like, wow, I can, you know, I don't have to use a plugin to grab the microphone and grab the webcam.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, now we have that access. Now what do we do with it? Exactly. Like, okay, I can, you know, I can put a hat on you and you can dance around, or we can actually go out and create a peer connection. Wow, that's better.
Well, that's actually very interesting. The hat example, while kind of trivial, does give you the sense of you have raw access to that image that's coming back or that audio stream that's coming in JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. And you can even access the bitmap of that as well and grab screenshots or, you know, take pictures, photo booth kind of thing, whatever you want to do.
I've found that as someone who knows how to, like, the most advanced kind of thing that I've done is just dealing with file upload. You say input type equals file. And I think most everyone who's listening has done that. You know, we've accepted a file upload. And then when you hear about things like cameras and microphones and camcorders, it's just like, whoa, that's way too complicated. Hey. But you can just start by saying input type equals file, right?
Well, it's funny you should talk about the, about data, because I've been talking, you know, we've been talking about get user media and all that. And it is also sharing of raw data. So you could, theoretically set up a file sharing, a whole file sharing service mm-hmm. using this, and people have done so. There's one, site that escapes me at the moment, the name of it, but you can, go there, and on their homepage is a box. You drag the file, drop it on the box. It pops up with a link. You share that with a friend, and they're getting that file from your hard drive. Instantly and anonymously.
So WebRTC doesn't think about anything other than the underlying protocol. It's not set up for chat or set up for video.
No, it's sharing data, and what you do with that is up to you.
Well, that's very useful to know. So it's more than just a Skype killer. If there's some way need for me to peer to peer something in a secure way, mm-hmm. I should look.
And it is also, is all encrypted in the spec. That's specified that everything is encrypted.
Ah, okay. So it's a little harder to shoot myself in the foot with this.
A little harder.
Yeah.
And a little harder for the NSA, but, I'm sure they're
just a little.
They're listening.
It'll slow them
they're
down.
They're listening
by a
right
minute,
now,
yeah.
So yeah.
They subscribe to the show, so.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so I've learned that I can go and say input type equals file in HTML and then say mm-hmm. accept image capture equal camera or capture equal microphone. You can get that live data. You can apply it to a canvas. You can put WebGL filters on it. Mm-hmm. At that point, it's just data in memory, and then I can call upon WebRTC and then just push it across from there?
Yeah, that sounds simple.
It's trivial.
Yes, no problem. It's really possible to do all of this, but it isn't trivial, unfortunately.
What about things like PeerJS and different mm-hmm. things that can allow me to like raise the water level a little bit?
That would be my next thing to introduce is the idea of frameworks that have already figured out a lot of this hard stuff for us. Mm-hmm. There are more and more of them. PeerJS is one. And I actually use that one as an example a lot just for one-to-one video chats and things like that. It's very easy to set up with PeerJS. If you want to go beyond the two people, though, you'll have to use something more like simple WebRTC, mm-hmm. Where it has a little bit more robust modular architecture. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely frameworks out there to make all of this stuff a lot easier. You just have to find one that already does what you want it to do for the most part.
And these are all done in JavaScript. They don't care about a backend. A .NET person or a Node person or PHP person can use all these?
JavaScript is the main API, but there are a lot of ways to deal with it. If you're a Node.js person, definitely there's modules for that, support WebRTC and help you with your development there. You can, I think there's also frameworks in other languages too, because WebRTC really is very open. So you're not only communicating over the web and, web technologies, but you can also communicate with SIP, with plain telephone networks. So you can send text messages. There's interfaces for all of these different interoperabilities available.
And SIP, again, parsing out our acronyms.
Yes. SIP is used, it's mostly telecommunications type thing, but it's for, low latency data, text messages, things like that. You would use mm-hmm. for use SIP.
So does that mean that we thought about our Skype killer, but I also use, mm-hmm. for example, Link, which is a Microsoft product. There's also things like Asterisk. There's these different VoIP, voice over IP mm-hmm. things like Vonage. Could I potentially build my own phone and plug it into a back-end system in my browser?
Absolutely, you could. Sure.
Do we know if Google uses things like this? If you're using like a Google Hangout or
Google
phone?
Hangouts, yeah, get Google Hangouts uses WebRTC for sure. The voice, I'm not sure. That came a little bit earlier. I'm not sure what they're. I'm sure that there's some WebRTC components there, but now that I just heard they're phasing it out. I'm kind of sad about that, but that's another thing altogether. But yeah, Google Hangouts definitely uses this, and. There are ways, you can plug into all sorts of other tools and frameworks to add functionality. Like Google Hangouts has that nice feature where whoever's talking takes up the screen, right? Mm-hmm. So you could listen on the audio API and find out who's speaking, and you could do the same thing. So there are a lot of different ways to do some creative things with this that either mimic what's already been done or, you know, invent your own.
Now, when researching WebRTC and trying to understand what's involved and how I would write to it, I see lots and lots of blog posts and people talking about something called signaling. And they keep saying WebRTC and signaling. And it seems like WebRTC is working along nicely, but no one can agree on signaling. What is signaling and why do I care?
Signaling. Signaling comes in because you're thinking you have these peers that are talking to each other, right? Mm-hmm. Well, how did they get that connection? How did they get there? They didn't make, how do you make that initial handshake? That's signaling. So you'll need some sort of low latency data channel to send that handshake information. Say, oh, this is my external IP, or, you know, this is the relay server that I'm using. And to do that, WebRTC does not help us. There's nothing in the spec that specifies what you need to use for signaling. It's totally up to you. So, you know, while it would be nice if there was something that was built in, it's also very freeing because you can use whatever technology is a good fit for you. So, you know, if you're a telecommunications person, you could use SIP. If you're a web person, use WebSockets, for example, or XHR polling, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's totally up to you, whatever your strength is, whatever your infrastructure already would support.
I see. So WebRTC answers the question of, we're on the phone, how are we talking to each other? But as far as how we dialed and all of that handshake, some people seem to think that this is a huge problem and we need to solve this and standardize it. And everyone else is like, oh, we've got REST. We can just make our own web services to handle that.
Exactly. No problem.
I saw a blog post that said that there's a new digital version of an old joke that says two WebRTC engineers walk into a bar to talk about signaling, except that they never get to leave. It seems like this is a problem that is not going to be solved anytime soon. So we should think about how to do this ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Find out the solution that works best for you and the way you work, the language that you know and or what systems you have to work within.
I see lots of getting started examples and lots of little chat servers and things like that. But would someone really want to go, live today with a WebRTC based product? I mean, other than Google Hangouts, who certainly control the browser and the server.
Sure. And somehow they're able to make it work in all browsers. Because they can.
I assume there's a fallback, like, right? I mean, it works, works in other things. They use a plugin.
Yeah, exactly. So they'll prompt you, just click here to install our little tiny thing that you need to use this, and then everybody just moves on. And because it's Google, nobody complains. But if it were you or I saying, oh, install my plugin, well, maybe not,
Well, I mean, if it is perceived that it's a small plugin that sits between me and an awesome experience, presumably I will it up. But I think I will admit, though, I did not realize how many hidden plugins and hidden extensions were around just to support Hangouts and voice on Google. I think we just assumed it was built into Chrome.
Yeah, because they make it feel that way, for sure. As far as getting started and building something to take to market, I think now is a perfect time to do that because nobody else has done it yet. do you want to wait until somebody else has already had your big idea, or do you want to actually go out and learn this and do it now? Because it's coming. I really have no doubt that they're going to get all this. Those guys are going to get out of that bar eventually. Mm-hmm. This is going to happen. It's just a matter of, everybody working things out. And if it is, a small plugin, or if there's something, if we get critical mass, then having a plugin to make WebRTC work in IE won't be that big of a deal,
I wonder if I should just use something like OpenTalk or TalkBox, TokBox, instead.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is an option if what you're building, if you don't mind using a third party, and if what you're building is a good fit for it. Mm-hmm. If there's a feature that it's not supported, they do have open source, it is open source, so you could, theoretically build on, but you're building onto their framework.
Because they've built an API kind of on top of it. In their docs, they actually say, and I think this is a funny phrasing, go beyond vanilla WebRTC. And by putting the word vanilla in front of it, that implies that somehow WebRTC isn't sufficient.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Just... go beyond vanilla with our API. So it's
interesting.
People are building on top of this, and they're doing it in a way that is extending it, presumably, with things like signaling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, extending it with signaling or with their own, features or tapping into other voice over IP networks. Build something on top of that that just does something new. You know, does something, connects to something that it didn't connect to before, like your refrigerator or your microwave or something.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the demos that you've seen or the uses of WebRTC that would surprise you that aren't just chat and Skype killers?
There's a way to distribute your hosting using WebRTC. I don't know if you've seen this yet. But you can share the load of all of your assets on your site, or specific downloads or videos, or even just the images. You go to the site, and everybody else who goes is sharing their cache basically with you. So you can take a big load off of your server that way. So I thought that was really interesting.
So it's kind of like BitTorrent, in the sense of, if we're all here together, then let's just serve it from that person over there instead of here.
Exactly. And those are out in the wild today, right now. There's one that was just bought by Yahoo, actually. Mm-hmm. So Yahoo is interested in this kind of technology.
Interesting. What do you think some of the threats are, the things that could stop WebRTC? It seems like Apple and Microsoft really haven't come out and said anything about it yet. And
they just
bought Skype, so that...
Right. There's that. Apple actually joined the working group quietly about a month ago.
Oh, okay.
Didn't really say anything.
That's cool.
There's no big fanfare about it, but they have done that. So that is quite possible. You know, there's movement there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Microsoft goes, you know, I don't know about that. I think that is the gray area right now. People aren't sure what Microsoft's going to do because they have their own version of the spec called CU WebRTC. And I think, you know, until they get at least, they've got other ideas about how things should be structured.
Mm-hmm.
And until they get at least some of those ideas in there, I think there's going to be, you know, a little hiccup with IE.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they'll figure that out at some point.
They will, exactly. I mean, especially when we start getting more and more developers building cool stuff with this, there's no stopping.
Right.
No stopping progress.
Well, and like we said about the point that I will install a plugin if necessary, certainly if my browser's auto-updating and it just starts becoming ubiquitous, when every browser but IE supports something, then eventually IE comes around, like with WebGL.
Right, exactly.
What about quality? People have said that WebRTC is using a very narrow audio standard. It's using G711, which is really kind of less good quality as most VoIP solutions that are already out there.
Right.
Is that going to derail it? And then we got 4K TVs coming out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is WebRTC dead on arrival just because the quality isn't high enough?
Well, I mean, you can always... there are also the opportunity to put an additional plugin for different codecs. That's being done. There's one for to support H.264 video in Chrome. So you know, if you're building something where you're going device to device, you can kind of extend things and go beyond the Opus or the audio codec that's being used right now. But I think for just over the web kind of audio, it's it's not bad. Mm-hmm. But it's the video codecs that are going to get us, I think, because there's a fight right now between Google and basically everyone else about what the standard codec is going to be for video. They, of course, want VP8, and just about everybody else wants H.264, just for backwards compatibility. But in a way, I think Google's right. You know, VP8 can be better quality at lower bit rates. Mm-hmm. So, I don't really have a dog in the fight, but... it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do. If they want to keep it agnostic and let you choose which one you want to use, or if they're going to dictate, in Chrome, you can only use VP8 in the future.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, H.264 is certainly the one that everyone has at top of mind, and it seems silly to, it's the whole Betamax VHS situation. Like, yes, Betamax was better, but it still didn't win. So just let it go.
Right.
And please rewind. Now, you've talked about WebRTC all over and up at Stanford Innovation Center, and you've actually got a Pluralsight course on this as well?
I do. I have a course, just an intro course on Pluralsight WebRTC fundamentals. And it's just sort of outlines what it is, how to get started, you know, and I really wanted to make that because I felt that, you know, when I was learning it, there wasn't anything very accessible for people who might have other, you know, base of skills, but don't really understand, you know, the intricacies of, SIP and, you know, handshaking and all of that. There was really kind of a really big chasm there between just this is what it is and here's how to actually use it. You know, so I felt like I needed to fill that gap and give some people things to hold on to as they climb up this very tall climbing wall of WebRTC.
Well, and I'm having trouble climbing up the wall of just HTML5 in the sense of there's just so much now, you know, like 2 years ago, the idea that I could have a tiny SQL server in the browser and local storage. And now there's new pop-ups. When I visit these demos, my browser says, we'd like to use your camera, your location, and your microphone. I'm like, this is it's a whole operating system in a browser at this point.
Yeah. It's it can be very overwhelming for sure.
Well, and again, not sure whether I want to use these things because they're not on every browser, like if IE is holding us back or whatever.
Right. You know, I really think that it's coming. Yep. I really think that it is. And especially if you can have machines talk to machines, there's a big opportunity there as well. So it's not all about just, you know, sitting in the browser and yes, that's a big part of it, but that's, you know, your client might come to you or your boss or somebody and say, hey, look, you know, what's this thing that lets these machines talk to each other? How do we do this? And you'll know how to do it.
Right. And certainly we can point out that while it might feel like WebRTC is brand new, people have been talking about this since at least 2010, 2011, really?
Yeah, it's true. And it's, you know, it's getting a lot of hype right now, but I think it is well-deserved.
Yeah. Well, and it's in more places than I would think. I'm not sure what version of Chrome I'm on, 30-something, but it's been around since Chrome 23 and Firefox 22. So it's actually on your computer right now, and you may not even know it.
Exactly. You don't even know it.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to put in the show notes links to kind of all the details. You gave a talk at Fluent.
I did.
JS, the O'Reilly Fluent Conference, and you had all sorts of great examples where you've got signaling with Socket.io, your Pluralsight Fundamentals course, and also WebRTC book by Alan Johnston and Daniel Burnett.
Yeah, that was, I think they're coming out with a third edition like next week. Mm-hmm. So.
Do I need to know this much, though? Can I just know the basics? Like, how deep do I have to go? I think maybe, if I may, people like you who've been doing this for 10 years, I mean, you've been involved in large system, large scale video for at least a decade.
Yeah, of course, you know, it was the F word, you know, the flash days. But people are still using that. I mean, and that's the other thing right now. People are still using Flash Media Server or Wowza Media Server, which uses the same technology, to do this kind of thing because it does work everywhere. Mm-hmm. But there's a big transition is going to happen away from that as soon as, you know, it's ubiquitous. So, yes, I've been doing this real-time communication thing for quite some time. And I'm really excited about it. Because, you know, the whole Flash thing is, it was bogged down by, licensing, you know, it was $4,500 for a server.
Yeah.
Just to even play with this stuff. And, so, you know, this being open source and available to everybody, I think it's really, really exciting.
Yeah. I think that, the way I phrase it, cause I work for Microsoft and people are always saying, hey, why did you kill Silverlight? And I say, we didn't kill Silverlight. The internet itself killed Silverlight. And you can cry about that, but it's still happening. So like Flash people and ActionScript people are crying, but at the same time, you know, plugins exist when, plugins exist to do what the browser can't do. And then the browser can do that and the plugin no longer has a reason to exist. And then new plugins will come out to do something more amazing.
Exactly.
So even though you have 10 years of experience in Flash, you don't mourn Flash?
You know, I had a moment.
took a knee.
I did. But no, I'm, you know, it's really opened up a lot of other technologies, other ways of looking at things. And I'm pretty excited about the future.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you for having me. It was really good to have this talk.
You can learn more from Lisa at learnfromlisa.com. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.